ended up discussing the geometry of space-time versus the geometry of field space. And field space is the infinite dimensional manifold. And each point in this field space is a full space-time configuration of the field. Now, then we introduce these mixed forms, which are forms both on space, time, and field space. And we stated this theorem that says that top one form, so top forms on M and one form on field space, can be uniquely decomposed into a source form and a boundary form. This is just integrations by part, so is nothing is a fancy way to state something we know. And the prototypical example is where it's used is this situation where we have a Lagrangian. So here, this is a top zero form. Well, I just write like this without caring the rest. It's a top zero form, and it's the Lagrangian. Then we have E here, which is the equations of motion, the Euler-Lagrange. Oh, I should say what it is. So this is a source. Top one form. Lagrange. And this is what we called, this is a top minus one form now. And it's the, well, I write it in full, but I will not carry it on like this later. Presymplectic potential current. Okay, so now let's look at what these are in a more specific example. So L more explicitly. E I've already written last time, but let me write it again. I will assume that L is of the form L as a function of space-time, the field and the first derivatives of the field, but nothing more, and is multiplied by the volume by a volume form on space-time. So this is just a top form that makes this. This is a scalar, and this is the top form part. So I can always do this split. There's nothing. So now E is equal to this delta phi. Well, I don't need to write the wedge because what follows is a zero form. And here we have dl over d phi I minus dl over dA phi I epsilon. And so it's clear that is a one form is source because there are no derivatives acting on this differential. And it's a top form over spacetime. And these are the equations of motion, of course. And then there is theta, which is d phi I wedge. Again, wedge is not necessary. Here it will look maybe. Let's see. How do I want to write this? I want to write it like this. Delta L over dA phi I, and here it's epsilon A. What do I mean by epsilon A? Epsilon A is just I contracted with that specific direction. So in coordinates, this is if epsilon is a volume form, morally speaking, this is the normal, if you want, times the volume form on. So is the object that if I pull it back, okay, let's do it like this. If I pull it back to sigma, the boundary gives me the normal times the volume form on sigma. Okay, so this is essentially contracting with the normal of the surface on which I pull it back. But this is defined in the bulk. It looks a bit confusing, super abstract, but in concrete example, usually it's easier to see. Okay, so we will see examples, so don't worry too much about this. It looks more complicated than it is. You can think of a top, again, you can also think like this. You have a top minus one form, like an electric current, and then you can express it as a vector field, dually. And so the vector field is the object without this guy. So it has an index, which is up, in fact. So this is just the current associated to this one form. So if you remove that, this is just about the dualization of the picture. Okay, so now what do we do? What do we do with this? Well, we start an analysis that from just the Lagrangian, we want to build up our phase space. So the first step is to implement the equations of motion. The second step will be to exploit this extra structure that we gain as the boundary term of the variation of the action. So as you can see, this kind of things looks like a momentum, right? It's the L over the velocity of the field. So good. So let's start with the simple definition. Euler-Lagrange locus is F bar. Is given by the field configuration such that E at phi vanishes. So this is an abstract way to say this is the space of field that satisfies the equations of motion. So a one form like this vanishes if and only if its coefficient vanishes, because it's source. So this makes sense. There are no derivatives here. So for this to vanish identically, it means that this object must vanish by itself. Okay, so I will assume that this is also a nice smooth manifold. Of course, in general, it's not the case, but we don't care. I will also introduce this notation, the embedding of F into F. So what is the picture for this? We have our field space F. And inside F, there will be some subsets of configurations that satisfy the equations of motion. And this is the map that essentially allows me to think of so F, in a way, it's a bit redundant, but I will need this notation later. This is just the map that sends F bar as an abstract manifold inside the bigger manifold in which I'm defining it. So it's a bit of a redundant object to some extent, but will be useful later, well, in a second, to define what it means to go on shell. To go on shell, it means to pull back objects here. So that's why I need this symbol for, then I will not use it all that much, but it's useful to introduce it. Okay, so what is the meaning of on shell for me? This is not something universal, but is a convenient definition for discourse. What I mean, to go on shell, for me means pulling back to F tilde. And this is different than evaluating at a phi in F. Why? Because here we are talking not just about functions. For a function, it would be the same to evaluate it at the point and pulling it back. But for one forms, they have this extra guy sitting there. So a one form that is evaluated at, so let me do a concrete example. In finite dimensions, which is much simpler. Suppose I have, I don't know, R4 foliated by constant time slices, and I call sigma 0 is the t equals 0 slice. So the picture is like this. This is R4, and this is my t equals 0 slice. Now, a one form that looks like alpha equal, 3 dt. This is, if I evaluated at t equals 0, this is still 3 dt. It's not, it doesn't vanish. But if I pull it back to sigma 0, then it does vanish. Because on sigma 0, t is identically 0, and only vector, it only knows about direction tangent to that surface, this one form. This is now a one form on here, so this vanishes identically there. Does it make sense? By pulling back, I'm killing all direction transverse to the surface. So for one form, there is a difference between evaluating and pulling back. Of course, if I have a function, it would be the same thing, but it's not the same for pullbacks, so for higher forms. So I use this stronger notion of going on shell that is useful. It will simplify a bit certain things. In any case, we will see that what we care really about is F bar. So we don't really care about variations that take us off shell in this. So all we're interested in, F is an auxiliary space and F is the true space. So we always want to pull back on F bar. Okay. Then I will also use, instead of using this symbol over and over again, which becomes quite heavy in equations, I will use the following notation. I will write if and only if. So this is and I'm saying this because some people mean going on shell with the second meaning. So it's a convention. Using a symbol like this or a hatted equality is quite common to mean going on shell, whatever it was meant above. So I will use this wiggly equality to mean this is an equality that holds after pulling back to the shell. Okay. Okay, So this is notation, but is good to make it clear. One more point, which is useful, is to introduce Jacobi fields. These are solutions of the linearized equation of motion. So why they're interesting? Because of the following. So remark, a vector field which is tangent to the shell is a Jacobi field, right? So let's see this. So if this is tangent to the shell, it means that Lx of E will be 0. Does this make sense, these starting points? Then I do a computation, but we need to agree on this starting point.
Linearized in what?
In the field.
Okay.
So it's a small perturbation of the field. They do perturbation theory. And so so let me say these at phi. Well, the phi will become clear. So does it make sense, this one? So if it's tangent, it means that is a small variation in between two solutions of the equations of motion. Since E is 0 for both, it means that this derivative is 0. Now, if I do the computation, I see that this is, there is the first one, which is kind of E, but this is clearly 0 on shell, because it's just E itself, right? So this then, I also want to evaluate it at a phi on shell. So let's say like this. So this evaluated at phi is 0. And of course, the more interesting piece is the second one, where I'm varying these equations. So this will be delta E over delta phi times delta x, and then evaluate at phi. Now, when I do this computation, what I find is delta E over delta phi delta x of phi plus delta E over how it depends on the first derivative. And then I get the first derivative of delta x phi plus all the others. And this is, there is a delta phi in front. This is clearly a solution of the linearized equations of motion. Here I'm taking my equations of motion and perturbing it in its, does it make sense what I'm writing? It's a bit abstract, but it's kind of, I'm just taking the first perturbation in the direction delta phi at phi bar of the equation of motion. So this is like saying a linearized equation of motion, linearized at phi bar. As a background, do the first order variation, and I find this. So if this is 0, this is a Jacobi field. That's what I mean. I will also assume that the converse is true, which is not always the case. But it's a technical point. So I will assume that all solution of the linearized equations of motion are tangent vector fields. But that's I don't really need it much, but it simplifies a bit the discussion. Okay. Does this make sense? Assumption. Converse is true as well. But this is an assumption. It's not a theorem that there are counterexamples. Okay. Good. So why do I need this? I will need it soon when I talk about symmetries, this idea. Before talking about symmetries, I want to spend a word on locality. F, as we say, is the space of sections of a bundle. And this means that I can modify phi as I like at every point, right? I just change my sections wherever I like it. So delta phi at x is whatever I want. Whatever I want, not constrained. So this is what one means by locality. This is a space of local fields in the sense that I'm free to vary them where I want. So I say that this is, maybe I say it like this, this is local. Now let's contrast this with f bar. F bar is definitely not the space of sections of a bundle over M. Why? Well, because delta phi must satisfy, delta phi to be tangent to F bar, must satisfy the linearized equation of motion. This is what we saw here. So it's not free. If I change my field a little bit here and it's an on-shell field, it will propagate this perturbation. So this is not a local space of local fields over M. And for example, this means that Takin's theorem does not hold over F bar. So consequence, there are many consequences, but one is that Takin's does not hold over F bar. In fact, it makes little sense to talk about this mixed Ford even over F bar. We'll do it with the idea that they are defined in the bigger space and pulled back, but they're not intrinsically defined over F bar. So if you're trying to prove something and you really want to use the theorem over F bar, well, you have to be careful. And this makes some proofs of certain statements much more technical and complicated. Okay, so this is an important observation. This doesn't mean that F bar is not isomorphic to some space of sections of a bundle. It will not be 1 over M. F will sometimes can still be isomorphic to a local space, just not 1 over M. Usually 1 over sigma. What is this correspondence? The correspondence is, if I know my initial conditions, I can evolve the fields, and there is a one-to-one correspondence between initial conditions and solutions to the equations of motion. But now, the initial conditions can be freely specified. So, if one-to-one correspondence between unconstrained initial conditions at sigma and and phi bars in F. We will see now some examples of this at work, so it will be made more clear. But then, in this way, we can find again something local even for this space. And this is the trick. The trick is that we want to identify this covariant phase, this covariant space of solutions of the equations of motion with our canonical phase space defined at the level of initial conditions. So that's the correspondence between F, a space of solutions to the equations of motion, and P's and Q's at a fixed time. So for us, this F will become a proxy for phase space, but it's through this kind of subtle correspondence. So what is this? This is nothing else than the canonical phase space. Okay, here I stated it a bit abstractly. Now we will see it in, we will see it at work. So, just to complete the picture, since here we are talking about phase spaces and so on, let me say a couple of words about the symplectic structure on these phase spaces, and then we'll do the example. So here we analyzed the consequences of having this E form. Now we analyze the consequences of having the theta form. Definition. We have the, again, gray symplectic current. This is omega as the variation of theta. So remember from the first few lectures, we had a symplectic potential. We could build a symplectic form by taking the variation. Here is the same thing. The Lagrangian gives us the potential, and we define the form. What is this? This is a top minus 2. Sorry, a top comma 2. Top minus 1, 2 form on here. So this is the current piece because it has the same space-time form degree as theta, but then there is an extra delta in front, so this becomes a 2. Okay. Theorem. So this theorem will look extremely simple, but it's very important. The covariant, so omega bar is conserved on shell. So remember, this is a current, we can write a conservation equation. What does it mean? It means that d omega bar is conserved on shell. So this top two form pulled back to the space of solutions vanishes. This is a delta, this is a d. I hope they are visible enough. So let's prove it. So we say that the second variation of the Lagrangian must vanish. And this is basically all there is. Then I write it as I do this computation in two steps. Then I get delta E. plus, sorry, minus d omega. Now, this one pulled back on shell gives zero, because I'm just pulling back the equals zero is the, is like here for t, is the surface, is exactly how I'm defining the shell. So pulling back, this goes to zero, and therefore I conclude by definition. So why is this so important? This is so important because it tells me that if M globally hyperbolic, so I'm in the first picture over there, and delta sigma is different from zero, omega sigma defined as the integral of this top minus one form over the Cauchy surface does not not depend on choice of sigma on shell. So any sigma will do. So it's not that I have to pick a foliation and it's preserved along the foliation. No, no, I just pick whichever two Cauchy surfaces that cut through my manifold, my spacetime, and if I compute this object, I pull it back on shell, and I will get the same quantity. So in particular, I can pick one I like for whatever reason. Maybe it's the t equals zero slice, which where it's easy to do computations, and I can use it to work with. Yeah. Because this is means that the manifold is M cross R. So it's just to avoid it branching off and doing, like, it's a bit of a technicality. Locally is always like that. So what happens if there are, for example, here I put the no boundaries. What happens if there are boundaries? I mean, the kind of second picture over there, then it will say that omega sigma final minus omega, well, let me just call it final and initial, will be equal to the integral of omega on the time-like boundary. And this is called the sometimes symplectic flux. Sorry, this is, again, a non-shell equality. So this is how much my degree, how many degrees of freedom, since omega somehow encodes the degrees of freedom I have in my phase space, this is telling me if it is non-zero, I can, I don't know, choose boundary conditions here and do things like that. And this is telling me how many degrees of freedom are leaking out of the system through the time-like boundary. So they don't make it from the initial surface to the final one. This is like a conservation of the electric charge, in a way. So this is like a current, an electric current. The difference of the charges is the outflux through the boundary. It's the same story. Flux through B, which is C cross time. So why this is so interesting? Well, because a consequence of this is that it seems that if I have F bar and these the space of solutions equation of motion equipped with this two form, now this is a two form, it's not, since it's integrated, it's not anymore a top two form, this starts having the look of an actual phase space. And indeed, this will be in some, not in all circumstances, when there is gauge symmetries, it's not, for example. But morally speaking, this is a good proxy for canonical phase space. So this is, in many cases, well, I don't want to make an absolute statement, but this is like a, this is what people call the covariant phase space. In fact, does it make sense? We have a space equipped with the two form. This two form is closed, so we're happy. The thing we're not sure about is whether it is non-degenerate. This is still an open question, and that's where things can get iffy with the with gauge symmetries. But it's a good proxy, and now we will see how it is indeed the case that it matches the expectations in some examples. Questions? So let's take the, a particle. A particle has Lagrangian L given by L of, I don't know, I can even write it. Let's write just the simplest possible Q dot square minus VQ. And since I want a one form, there is a DT. So I'm consistent with my notation. Now I do, I take variation of L. This gives me delta Q of T times the equations of motion, which we all know and I will not write again, plus DT of okay, didn't put the M, so it's just Q dot, well, delta Q, Q dot. So this is theta. And this is a top minus one, one form on M cross F. So let's check that all matches. Top minus one in the, so M in this case is R, so it's one dimensional. Top minus one is a zero form, so it works. There is no DT left. Sorry, the DT is outside here, but this is like D of something, right? Because it's a, maybe I write it like this. DT, DT. So this is what is inside the derivative. The differential. And it's a one form over the space of histories. Now we can compute omega. Omega becomes delta q dot delta q. So you see, this is not this is not source. Well, first is a two form, so it doesn't make sense. But what one means here is really dt of delta q. So this is omega. This is delta t of q, which delta q. At t. Now, we want to apply this conservation theorem. This conservation theorem tells us that if we integrate our density on a Cauchy surface, we'd get something that is conserved. What does it mean in this case to integrate omega on a Cauchy surface? Well, here a Cauchy surface is just one point. It's just t equal t naught. So here sigma is the point t naught, right, in R. So if I this omega sigma is just the evaluation of this thing. Let me write it with the dots. It's a bit clearer. At t zero. Now, what is happening? Now, at a given time, I can specify positions and velocities independently. So at t equal to zero, q of t zero, so let me call it x equal q at t zero, and p equal q dot at t zero are independent data. Can be specified freely and independently. Therefore, this means that x and p are part of a new phase space, like a new space. This is a bit ridiculous because it is the space of section of something over sigma is this space of functions from sigma, which is a point, into R2. But this is just R2, of course. So in this case, things from infinite dimensional become finite dimensional. And they're finite dimensional because the Cauchy surface is a point. But what is nice is that we mapped this infinite dimensional space of fields. Going on shell, we found a space of solutions. And this is isomorphic to a finite dimensional space of initial conditions. And now we see that in this case, this guy, F, with its on-shell object, is isomorphic to P with its symplectic structure omega. And this is just T star of R with its canonical symplectic structure. It's just the phase space of the particle, of the point particle. Phase space of So this is the idea behind this covariant phase space. So here we saw it at work in the simplest possible case. One can do, of course, another simple case that works similarly is the scalar field, massive scalar field. In this case, L will be, well, it's kind of an exercise to write it with differential forms and with tensors. Let me write it a bit in a uselessly fancy way, but plus m square phi star phi. Then we have the equations of motion, which are delta phi. Well, I keep putting the wedge, but there's nothing wrong with putting it. It's just a bit redundant. D star d phi, which is, of course, the box, minus m square star phi. So this is star box. OK? So this is, maybe I write it like this. This is star of box phi minus m square phi. Fine.
And now what is theta? Theta is delta phi, wedge star d phi.
So this is the analog of this q dot. Because it's a derivative of phi. In fact, the star is telling you that you're looking at it eventually in the normal direction from the surface. So then when you compute phi sigma out of this, omega sigma, sorry, you get delta. Here one has to be careful with the signs, but we don't really care. So in fact, it's minus delta of star d phi. Here, the star, OK, this is kind of, let me do the computation, then I make a remark. This will be d phi wedge. If you look at this, is a one form, star is a d minus one form. So this is a top form on sigma. And in fact, is nothing else, which is essentially a dual to a scalar. Right? So this becomes delta phi dot epsilon. What is phi dot? Phi dot is the derivative of phi along the normal direction from the surface. So this is, again, we are again in the same situation as before. Now we observe that evaluated at a certain surface, phi and phi dot can be chosen independently. This is what one usually calls pi. And so this is isomorphic to pi omega, with omega being the integral over sigma of d phi wedge. Well, maybe I should call it d phi. And the map is that phi at x is equal to, this is a point in sigma, is equal to phi at that point, and pi is equal to phi dot, n a d a phi evaluated at that point. But they're, again, independent quantities, so I can treat them as such. And now I haven't, this is, again, a local space of sections and so on, but on sigma. And it's an infinite dimensional space because I don't have, now my Cauchy surface is free to be, it's not just a point. There's any questions?
Yeah, so the way we calculate delta L is always just by integration by parts, right?
Yeah. There's no mystery in that piece. Here it just looks a bit weird because I'm using forms, but if you do it with the nabla phi square minus, etc., here what you get, this is the same as writing, like I write it here, d phi wedge dA, d phi, and A. So now the catch is that I felt free to have the star crossing the delta, the stars or the nabla here crossing the delta freely. Well, I didn't really. One has to be a little careful about that. Here, I'm just looking at the scalar field on the background. But if your metric is part of your field space, the metric on spacetime, then there might be subtleties in doing these kind of operations. This is also a scalar field, so that there's nothing would really change, even with gravity. However, in general, one has to be a bit careful about what one is considering part of your dynamical field space and what is background structure, what is fixed and what is and what varies, what I'm considering in equations of motion for and what is just given. So this is just a side note on that front. So I have a little bit of time if there is no more. So just to wrap up, what was the logic here? The logic here was we want to build phase space starting from the Lagrangian. And in fact, we also would like to have a very sleek way of, and this will become more apparent in the next part when we talk about symmetries and other theorems, of dealing with these objects, like symmetries, conserved charges, conserved currents, and so on. These are space-time concepts, but we know that these space-time concepts, like a conserved Noether current, is also related somehow to the generator of the symmetry. But being a generator of the symmetry is a concept in phase space. So there is kind of a tension because you have a something that is lives in space-time and that is clearly related to something that lives on phase space, which is instead associated, as we've seen, to a fixed time surface. So to try to navigate this thing efficiently, one can introduce this covariant phase space idea, which is to treat not so much phase space as something given at a fixed slice, and I do a canonical analysis and so on, but I work more abstractly on the space of histories that satisfy the equations of motion. And this is the correspondence between the two in the simplest cases. It gets a bit more complicated when we add gauge symmetries. The other reason to apply these tools is just not ever to break space-time covariance. So if we want to do gravity, for example, we know that once we pick a slice, we're breaking up diffeomorphic symmetries. Like diffeomorphic transverse to the slice gets messed up. So trying to work as long as possible upstairs in the covariant space of histories has its advantages because it makes all the manipulation much easier, slicker, and effective, and also clearer conceptually. And only maybe at the last moment you want to go back to the actual phase space where, one last point, just as I said, in presence of the gauge symmetries, it's not guaranteed that that object is a phase space in the technical sense, because the degeneracy part, non-degeneracy part of the of what makes a phase space might not be there. This is important because when you quantize something, you associate a Hilbert space, roughly speaking, to a symplectic manifold, not to a pre-symplectic one. So one has to be careful in not, in some sense, taking too seriously that covariant phase space defined like that, in the sense that it's an intermediate object for, depending which application you're interested in, of course. But in some cases, it's just an intermediate object. Okay, maybe instead of introducing, so I just say it. A teaser for next time. Next time we will do Noether's first theorem. Which can be understood as the following. We want to understand the following correspondences. So this is Noether's theorem. From a symmetry of the Lagrangian, we get a conserved charge, or a conserved current, which is even nicer. Let's say charge. Now, we also know that once we have a symmetry, we often have symmetry generators in phase space. Now, and that there is a correspondence between these two. So we want to understand this triangle of implications from this perspective. So now we are adding layers to the picture by bringing back in the symmetries. And this is not completely unsimilar to the other triangle. We didn't have this corner because we were looking at a phase space picture where there was no conservation except when we introduced a Hamiltonian, if you remember. But this correspondence is similar to having G acting on a phase space, and then we had this relationship between Poisson brackets and vector fields. So this is the algebra. This will be that bottom part of the story from the first part of the course, and this is in a way new because we have more structure. We have a Lagrangian to work with, and therefore a dynamics. Have a good weekend.